Welcome, everyone, to episode 234 of the NBA podcast. I'm Brian Toporek, and my God, do we have a lot to talk about today. The Warriors are facing a 3-1 deficit. They are on the precipice of their dynasty collapsing. So we will talk about games 3 and 4, preview game 5, and we also have a trade to talk about, thanks to the Brooklyn Nets and Atlanta Hawks with the Allen Crabbe deal that got announced Thursday. So we will get into all of that shortly. Before we do that, a reminder that you can follow us on Twitter at the NBA Pod. In our bio, you can find our Twitter handles, so give us a follow as well. You can also find us on iTunes, so please subscribe, download, leave some 5-star reviews. It really helps us out. And we're now being hosted on Spreaker, so check them out on Twitter at Spreaker. Joining me today, as always, is my very stable genius of a co-host, Morten Jensen. How's it going, Mort?
It's going well, Brian. It's not going as well for me as it is Kawhi, and I'm very, very jealous of not being a very, very fantastic basketball player.
Yeah.
As, like he is, because, my God, I know we all put Kawhi on a pedestal, but even so, is he underrated? I feel he's underrated.
I stopped underrating him at approximately game 2 of the Sixers-Raptors series when I realized he had gone full Terminator, and he has not stopped going full Terminator ever since.
I love his game. Like just from an aesthetic standpoint as well, obviously he's very, very efficient and like he's analytically inclined, takes threes, gets to the line a lot, but just the way that he plays. Yeah. I can't comprehend the people would still say when he was on the Spurs, oh, the Spurs play a boring brand of basketball. Like this dude is like Picasso. When he's on the NBA court, it's unbelievable. With the way he just negotiates screens, the way that he manipulates defenses, the way he never, never rushes shots, the way he's so calculative about where to get a shot off, how he will use one extra dribble and going from a good shot to a great shot. He has virtually no weakness. Even as a playmaker, which is the one primary thing that people like bring up and say, oh, well, he's not great at that. He's not bad.
Yeah.
He's not bad by any means. You can easily have him make decisions with the ball in his hands. Like, it's no problem. I'm really struggling to find a weakness in his game. He's outstanding, is my point.
I was told he was a system player, though. So strange.
Oh, right. Oh, God. Yes, that was some time ago.
Yeah. So, I don't think we need to say that much about Game 3. Klay Thompson missed the game. Kevon Looney missed the game. Kevin Durant missed the game. Steph Curry did all he could to keep them in it. He had 47 points, the second most points ever scored in a finals loss, trailing only LeBron James last year. But, they're just so undermanned, they couldn't do it. So right. the Raptors go up 2-1. We're heading into a pivotal game 4 Friday at Oracle. Could be the last game ever in Oracle Arena. The Warriors get up big early in the game. They had a double-digit lead in the first quarter. But the Raptors, it felt like the inverse of Game 2, where the Raptors couldn't hit a shot to save their lives in the first half, but foul trouble and getting the free throw line really helped them stay in the game. They just kept it within 5 or 6 points, especially heading into halftime. Coming out, Kawhi hits 2 big threes, gives them their first lead of the game. And, the Warriors have become famous for these third quarter runs where they just bury you. The Raptors did that to the Warriors in Oracle Arena in Game 4 of the NBA Finals last night. Unbelievable. And so the Raptors are now up 3-1 in the NBA Finals, heading back to Toronto. Game 5 Monday, the Raptors could win their first ever NBA championship.
Yeah. So, Scotiabank Arena.
Something tells me it's going to be a little lit there on Monday.
Yeah, I have a feeling, the term raise the roof, I have a feeling this literally might happen.
Right.
Jesus. I'm so psyched for that game.
Yeah.
It's going to be completely insane. And Jurassic Park, the 33, 45, 57, it seems like there are so many more Jurassic Parks just popping up everywhere in Canada.
Yeah.
Like, all of them are going to be off the hook. I'm pretty sure that if I say stay perfectly still, if the Raptors win, I'll sort of feel the earth move here in Denmark when it happens. Because, the entire collective of Canada will jump at the same time.
Right.
Yeah.
So, let's talk about Game 4 first. And
let's do it.
The big surprises, of course, Klay Thompson came back, which was relatively expected. You know, heading into game three, we had the discussion of, with KD already ruled out, should they hold Klay out? They ultimately did, for the reasons we talked about last episode, where they just said, look, we're going to play it safe. If he aggravates this thing, that's going to cost him the rest of the finals. We're okay effectively punting this game if it means, you know, Klay and hopefully KD come back for game four. KD did not come back. Klay did. Kevon Looney also, you know, he suffers the injury in game two, was supposed to be ruled out for the rest of the finals. All of a sudden, he's active game four, and he plays really well. Like, DeMarcus Cousins was very bad in game four. Looney came in that first half and really gave them a nice boost. Like, that's when they went on their run at the end of the first quarter. I think he had 8 points, I want to say, in that first quarter. But, you know, of course, the Raptors did the Raptors thing. It just methodically chipped away at it. But, were you surprised at just kind of how the game played out last night, especially after the Warriors got off to that big start?
Yes and no, because one thing I think is fair for all of us at this point to like acknowledge and realize is, you know, the Raptors just, they don't really get desperate, right? Mm-hmm. They keep their cool at all times, which is just a remarkable thing. So when they were down significantly early on, at no point did I sit there and feel, oh, this game is over.
Yeah.
Because the presence of Kawhi, the fact that they have so many defenders, we really need to talk about their defense.
Yeah.
That they can just keep throwing at guys. It's going to ultimately be a game changer. And it turned out that was actually the case. But did I lean towards Golden State? Yeah, I did, because Klay obviously is a huge addition after being out in game three.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's just normal. But Curry didn't hit. He was kind of off. DeMarcus, as you mentioned, didn't really play all that well. They couldn't really sustain that level of success. Mm-hmm. And when the Raptors pounced, it almost seemed like to me that they were just waiting for that perfect moment.
Yeah.
Like they were just waiting to see, like the Warriors went all out in the first half. I think they gave it everything they had. And the Raptors kind of gauged that and went, oh, okay, this is what you have. we come out now in the second half. Now we're going to give you all that we have.
Right.
And that's just better. And there's more of it because we are healthy. We are deeper. And we can throw so many different looks at you. And they did.
Yeah.
And both offensively and defensively. When Fred VanVleet hit that that somewhat long three, I think it was in the third.
Yep.
That's when I felt momentum change. Like that's when you could just see in the body language of every Raptor player on the court, yeah, we got this.
Mm-hmm.
We got this. This, like, the level of confidence and the swagger that they had, it was just an understanding, a collective understanding of we have this in the back.
Yeah. Yeah.
I love that.
It's just wild that we're saying this about a Raptors team just based on, you know, the last 5 years where the first sign of trouble, they usually just collapse. And now this year, I'm sure in large part because of Kawhi and even the other new guys, Danny Green, Marc Gasol, Serge Ibaka, have all been on these stages before, so they have that sense of like, we don't need to panic. Like Kawhi has, you know, he was up 3-2. He was 5 seconds away from winning a title in 2013. He knows how quickly these things fade. Like, I don't think they're going to go into game five feeling like this thing is over. I think they're still going to come out hungry. And I think it's all from Kawhi and Danny Green who are going to come in with the important message of, you know, we've been here before. When they were down 0-2 against the Bucks in the Eastern Conference Finals, Sirat Soli of Yahoo Sports wrote that story where Serge Ibaka was like, look, guys, I've been here before. We can do this. And lo and behold, they did. So I think they're drawing on their collective playoff experience, and they suddenly just have so much more to draw upon that they know. These things swing so quickly. Momentum swings so quickly in a game and then even in a series that you're right, they're not wilting. And it's just, I never expected to say that about a Toronto team, but it's a testament to Kawhi, to Danny Green, to Marc Gasol, to Lowry, to Ibaka, to Fred VanVleet, who we should pour one out for his tooth that got knocked out by an errant Sean Livingston elbow last night. It's just, I mean, it's, I just can't remember the last time I saw the Warriors in the Kevin Durant era flustered. And it felt like the Raptors were the more composed team in game four. Like, the Warriors came out with a bunch of nervous energy and they got off to that lead. But then, like, and the, you know, Oracle was booming with energy in that first quarter. But then as the Raptors just, you know, hanging around, you could feel like the Warriors players and the people in Oracle were just tightening up. There was a lot of tension there, and it just, it's not what I'm used to seeing these Warriors.
Right. So just to dial back to Toronto here for a second, when you say that, you know, we're talking about the Raptors here, and you brought up the last 5 years, it, what also needs to be mentioned here is the fact that, and here comes a really 90s reference, you more or less traded Mitch Richmond for Michael Jordan.
Yeah, right.
That will always carry significance. Oh, and you just threw in like a Danny Green, who in is still a very competent and quality NBA player, especially defensively.
Yes.
So I mean, obviously, that's going to just raise it up. And I don't want to sit here and crab on DeMar DeRozan, because I think what DeRozan did in those Toronto years was outstanding. It just wasn't what they needed.
Yeah.
They needed spacing. They needed different looks. When they were in tight games and DeRozan had the ball in the playoff situations, he would only go towards the rim. He wouldn't trust his jump shot. Not even like mid-rangers. Like, he would consistently try to go to the rim. He had nothing else in his bag during those situations. Whereas here you have Kawhi, who's got everything in his bag. That just provides a team with so much security and so much confidence in knowing that they have a guy who can, you know, manufacture a shot in whatever way he wants to.
Yeah.
If it needs to be from the outside, if it needs to be three throws, it needs to be a 17-footer. Doesn't matter. He will do it.
Yep.
DeRozan, I love DeRozan. And I think the whole narrative of him, you know, being weak-minded is offensive, especially when he's spoken of anxiety issues and people are trying to, like, weed that together. Like, stop it. No, this has nothing to do with that. He's an outstanding basketball player. He's just not as multifaceted as Kawhi Leonard. And that doesn't mean DeRozan is a bad player by any stretch.
It just
means that Kawhi is that much better and he's, you know, the Terminator.
Yeah, you can say DeRozan is a top 20, 25, top 30 player. Kawhi's a top 5 player. It's not a slight against anyone.
It's not top 3.
Yeah, it's not like a slight against other players saying they aren't as good as Kawhi. Most players in the league are not as good as Kawhi. This is, you know, this is what coming into the playoffs, and I think ahead of that Sixers-Raptors series, I said, like, this is going to be the series where Kawhi Leonard reminds people what he is. Like, we just, I think the Raptors all year, you know, they had 58 wins, I want to say, and they, you know, they were right in the thick of the Eastern Conference, the battle for the top seed, but you never felt like you saw the fully actualized Raptors because of the load management for Kawhi, which he has come out recently and said, like, if that didn't happen, I wouldn't be playing right now.
Yeah.
This is what the Raptors, this was their ceiling the whole time. We were just sleeping on it because we didn't get to see it as much during the regular season. But this is Kawhi Leonard. This is who he is. He's an incredible, incredible player. And he can be the number one option on a championship team. He is one win away from proving that.
How many guys have, you know, LeBron obviously in both Miami and Cleveland, but not many guys have won finals MVPs for different teams.
Yeah.
I mean, and thing is, like, we kept underestimating Kawhi, especially because of the quad issue. I think that played a lot of it into, like, we weren't sure about his health. Could he sustain a deep playoff run? Yada, yada, yada. And because he'd missed almost a full season, people were like, oh, no, he's probably not a top 10 player anymore. He's, you know, top 15, top 20. Like, where you said DeRozan was, like, top 20, top 25.
Yeah.
And he comes back, and he's just like, I'm still a robot. Oh, oh yeah.
Right.
We forgot.
Yeah.
He was needed an oil change.
We got the replacement parts. We're good.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, And I can't imagine now, not to go into the free agency talk necessarily, but if they win on Monday, I can't imagine him leaving.
Yeah.
Well, I just can't.
We'll save the free agency talk for if and when this series, well, this series will eventually end, but when it ends, we'll talk.
Well, let's hope so. Yeah. I do want this
series to I would like it point. To go 9 or 11. This has been really fun.
Yeah, it has. It has.
Let's go into game 5 now, Mort, which is Monday. We do not know the status for Kevin Durant, but just gut feeling, do you think he plays Monday?
Yeah, I think he does. There was a report out saying that he just wasn't close.
Yeah.
And I believe that, and that's fair. And if he's hurt, no skin off anyone's nose. He's earned the benefit of the doubt every single time. But I think he is the type of player who is so competitive, who is so just... has so much desire to win and so much desire to compete that he will himself onto the court. Even if it's like a Willis Reed moment where he just comes out, starts the game, and leaves after a couple of minutes, I think he wants to be out there in the finals. I think he absolutely is just thirsting to get on that court. And for that matter, can we kill all the narratives that he's sitting out because of free agency, please? Can we kill those right now with fire?
I haven't even seen those, but you told me about them. It makes me, it makes my blood boil.
Right. I've seen a couple articles. It's just, it is completely crabbing on his legacy. It's crabbing on him as a person. It's crabbing on him as a competitor. Like, it's crabbing on his resume. It is so disrespectful. You don't become a player of Kevin Durant's caliber if you're not extremely motivated to play. And I have had it up to here with the whole weak mindset ideology of Kevin Durant. I'm so tired of it. Like, he has burners, okay?
Yeah.
He might be sensitive in terms of media.
Right.
I kind of get it because some media circles will always try to get the worst out of a player. I get it.
Right.
But man, just don't question what he can do on the court. Don't question his mental approach to the actual game of basketball. This guy is going to go down as an absolute legend, a first ballot Hall of Famer, one of the greatest players to ever play, and probably one of the top 5 scorers to ever play the game of basketball.
Right.
It is so disrespectful to come out and say, well, he's not playing in the freaking finals because hashtag free agency.
Right.
Like, shut up. That's so dumb. It's the finals. This is what every player in the NBA lives for. They dream of this moment. People take actual major $1 million discounts on their salaries just to experience this. Like, get the hell off my lawn.
Yeah. No, because after game 4... you know, Brian Windhorst was on SportsCenter, and he reported that there was frustration within the Warriors organization about the injury, and so people immediately tried to aggregate that quote and make it sound like people were frustrated with Durant rather than just... I think they're just all frustrated, Durant included, that it hasn't healed as quickly as they would have liked. Like, of course he wants to be back on the court. Do you think he wants to watch his team lose? I mean, some people might argue yes, because then he gets the validation of, oh, you actually did need me to win these rings. But there's no way. Like, he wants to be there. The Warriors want him there. It just feels so similar to the Kawhi quad issue last year, where the player knows his body better than anyone. And if he's telling you he can't go, he can't go. They're not being soft or weak-minded, as you said. They're saying, like, look, I just don't feel right, and I can't gut through this injury. It's not like a Kevon Looney thing where apparently he, like, shattered his shoulder but can't hurt it any worse, so he's just going to gut it out, and it's a pain management thing. Right. This is, like, this could get worse. If you play and you aggravate it more, this could and will get worse. So I don't begrudge Kevin Durant for listening to his body. As you said, he's got a long career ahead of him. This sucks, and this is super frustrating for him and the Warriors and all their fans. I get it, but look at what happened with Kawhi. Kawhi trusted his body. It forced the breakup with the Spurs, and again, he is now one game away from winning an NBA championship.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. I think the best term here is that it's a joint frustration.
Yeah.
I don't think the Warriors are looking at KD and complaining. I think they're just frustrated at the entire situation.
Yeah.
I don't think they have any ill will towards Durant about this. I think they are perfectly capable of understanding, hey, you know what? This injury can mess you up long term. That's not great. What they're frustrated about is simply the fact that one of their best two players is not able to play in a crucial NBA Finals series.
Right.
That's it. It's completely understandable. It's not like they're sitting there going, hey, you know, rush your rehab.
Yeah.
That's not the case. They're and maybe the better word is sad instead of frustrated.
Right.
They're sad that their second best player can't play.
Yeah. Or like disappointed. Yeah.
Disappointed. Sad. Whatever. Just frustrated is such an annoying word once in a while because it can so easily be misinterpreted.
Right.
So yeah, I don't think there's any animosity between those two sides whatsoever. And I totally understand the frustration. Totally understand it.
Yeah. So regardless of whether KD does or does not come back, the Warriors are now in the same spot that they were 3 years ago against OKC and that the Cavs were 3 years ago against them in the finals. They are down 3-1 heading into game five. Regardless of whether KD does or does not come back, do you think they have a chance of becoming only the second team now in NBA history to overcome a 3-1 deficit in the finals?
Yes, because look, I will never sit here and say that a team that's won, what, 3 of their last 4 championships won't have a shot. They have Steph Curry. They have Klay Thompson. They also have Draymond Green, who seems to be at least trying to play a, you know, more of a basketball-oriented game than a complaining game. Last night was not the best example of that, but overall, his playoff run has been better.
Yeah.
I'm just not going to count those guys out.
Yeah.
I think Toronto's going to win the series and the championship. But I'm not sitting here going, oh, there's no chance in hell that the Warriors, you know, come back. This is the Warriors. They're here for a reason. I would be a complete fool if I didn't open that door.
Yeah. I kind of think if KD comes back, it still goes 7.
I could see that.
I think if the Warriors win Game 5, there's no way they're losing Game 6 in Oracle.
You know what would be so fantastic? Just imagine if KD comes back, it goes 7, and if I'm not mistaken, Game 7 is in Canada, right?
Correct.
Now, just imagine if Kawhi ends up hitting like a Game 7 buzzer beater.
Ugh.
And like, no, but
don't say Kawhi buzzer beater to me.
I know. I'm sorry. But imagine if he does.
Yeah.
And just imagine the legacy he would have in Canada for the next 50 to 60 years.
Oh, man. Yeah. I mean, he already does. No matter what happens from here on out.
Right. But if you just add up the drama just a little bit more.
Yeah. Ugh.
If they were down 1 and he hit like a Jordan fadeaway and they won by 1.
Yeah.
Like, oh, just, my God. Oh, I would love that so much.
Well, I mean, this has already been one of the most remarkable postseason performances of all time. I think, you know, I looked it up before we started recording, and in terms of just raw total points scored in a playoff run, Kawhi is number 8 right now. He has 684 points in 22 games. All 7 guys ahead of him either played 22 or 23, so he's trailing MJ, LeBron twice, Olajuwon, Iverson, Shaq, Kobe. He's going to pass Kobe and 2011-2012 LeBron in the next game if he gets 14 points, which he's going to. He will pass Shaq if he has 26 or more.
Like, which he's going to.
Probably. So yeah, he like at the end of next game, in all likelihood, he will have scored at least the 5th most points anyone has ever scored in a playoff run. Like,
so what you're telling me is that Kawhi has a historic playoff campaign.
Yeah, between that and the shot that I will not refer to. yeah, I mean, like,
okay,
what more can you say about this guy? He's incredible. I'm genuinely thrilled for him, just knowing how good he was before that injury. And it sucks to have missed a whole season or missed all but 9 games. I'm genuinely happy for him that he's come back and become this again. Because I always say this, the NBA is more fun when players are healthy, when everyone's healthy, like, even if it's bad for the Sixers. I just, you know, I enjoy seeing superstars at their peak. And yep. That's what Kawhi is right now.
I'm glad you brought it up, because the reason I did the whole, do you want to say it's historic, is because we've seen a little bit of backlash from people saying, well, it's a great playoff campaign, but it's not historic.
Yeah.
Like, it's not a historical campaign. Yeah, it is. Be quiet. It's, right. It's absolutely insane. For the playoffs, he's averaging 31.1 points, 9.1 rebounds. In the finals alone, he's at 30.8 and 10.8. He's not just leading the league here in playoffs in points. He's also doing it in free throw attempts, in steals, and in, I think, field goals as well. Like, a whole bunch of stuff. He's been at the very top of the pyramid here in the playoffs, and it is beyond ridiculous to insinuate that he's not having a historical campaign. Because when you factor in the defense, yeah, along with the rebounding and the very efficient scoring, like, this is a Jordan postseason. Like, this is an absolute top-tier performance.
He's shooting almost 50-40-90 while averaging 31 points a game.
While being, at least here in the playoffs, the best lockdown defender we have in the game.
Yeah. Yeah, it's just absolutely incredible. I'll say this. The Raptors better go out and win Game 5. Because if they don't, they really leave the door cracked.
Yeah.
And I would start to get nervous. But
Do you think the crowd would even allow that for Game 5, though? I have a feeling that energy level is just going to be so ridiculous. Like, the Warriors won't even be able to communicate.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it really all depends on... If KD does not come back in this series, the Raptors are going to win.
Yeah.
If he does... I still, you know, the Raptors should be heavily favored at this point, just because, you know, the Warriors need to win three straight. It's very hard to do that, especially in the finals. Mm-hmm. KD is the big X factor. As weird as it is to call Kevin Durant an MVP caliber player an X factor, he is. He will determine the fate of the rest of these finals. If he comes back, the Warriors still have a chance. If he misses Game 5, I think it's over.
Drama. Injuries, execution, defense, offense. This series has everything. And to just put the Canadian spin on it, this is what basketball is all about. Well, so, I'm digging this series so hard. I mean, and by the way, shout out to all the Raptors fans.
Yeah.
I mean, they, especially on Twitter, those guys are just in I don't know what state I can describe here what they're in euphoria. Ecstasy? I mean,
yeah.
Ecstasy. It's they are so happy right now. There are so many happy Canadians on Twitter right now, and I'm enjoying every second of it.
Right, keep it up, so polite. Canadians. not rubbing it in Warriors fans' faces at all. They're just like, this is great. This is
even more polite than normal.
right.
We would have won with Durant. Oh, that Durant is a nice player. Yeah. Very nice player. 11. Yeah.
Well,
you want to come over to my place and watch the game?
Since you mentioned drama, we do have to touch on one Game 3 storyline, unfortunately.
Yeah.
So Kyle Lowry in the fourth quarter dives out of bounds to save a loose ball. As he is trying to right himself, you know, he goes crashing into the courtside seats. As he's trying to get up, what we thought at first was a fan pushed him, and he took clear exception to it. You know, told the referee didn't do anything, but Oracle security escorted the fan out right away, basically. The next day, it comes out that this wasn't just a fan. It was Mark Stevens, who is a minority owner of the Golden State Warriors. So players are pissed. LeBron puts out, you know, an Instagram post or something that's just like, this is unacceptable. Imagine if the reverse happened.
Yep.
Imagine if Kyle Lowry pushed a fan. Like, what would have happened to him?
Yep.
Which is fair. That's a fair point. The NBA announces that Stevens is being fined $500,000 and is banned from all NBA games for a year and all Warriors-related activities for a year. Mort, do you think that punishment is enough?
Let me ask you this. Had it not been a minority owner and just a fan, would there have been any shadow of a doubt that that guy would have gotten a lifetime ban?
No, absolutely not.
Then you have my answer.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. I don't know if it's possible, but if it is, I think they should just force him to sell his shares.
Yep. I think so too. I think and just I want actually to attack this situation right on, because I've seen a lot of people kind of insinuate, well, oh, that wasn't a hard shove. He really didn't hurt Lowry. That's not the point.
Yeah.
The point wasn't the force of the push. It was the push itself.
Right.
It was the whole factor of a minority owner, or even if it had just been a fan, but someone who is not in the actual NBA game, doing something that is blatantly unnecessary and blatantly stupid. Sorry, but like, why would you do that?
Right.
Kyle Lowry did nothing wrong. He chased a ball. Sitting courtside comes with that thing in mind of, hey, an NBA player might actually run into us.
Right.
And you know what? Most normal people would look at that and go, well, that's an experience. I have something to tell my kids.
Or, like, respect. Good effort. I'm glad you were playing all out and, like, putting that much effort into this game. Thank you.
I have no idea what that push was meant to signify in his head.
Yeah.
Mark Stevens. Like, I have no idea what he thought he would accomplish by pushing Kyle Lowry. None.
I don't think any thought went into it. It was just, like, a frat bro, like a Silicon Valley frat bro, being like, "Yo, bro, get off my girl!" Like,
yeah, just, that's dumb, though. Yeah. I mean,
no,
yeah.
I know it was just, it's so inexcusable, no matter what the explanation. And I just don't think this guy has no business being around the NBA anymore. He should have a lifetime ban to games. He should not be able to own the team. He has, like, he should not be a part of this league if he's going to treat a player like that. As you said, you know, we had a couple instances earlier this year where there were documented cases of fans using racist language toward players, and they immediately got banned. And that was it. There was no question. The Utah Jazz, banned for life, which is great.
Zero tolerance.
Right. That is the right move. Like, just because you are a paying customer of the game, or in this case, a paying owner of the team, doesn't give you the right to treat players like subhuman. If you went and did that on the streets, you would be arrested.
Yes, I can't go into a Starbucks, grab somebody's coffee and pee in it and expect, oh, I'm a paying customer, it's okay.
Right. Yeah, it was just gross.
And also, can we just bring it up? I know, you know, I know that most people just wouldn't make this a topic, but I think it matters. Kyle Lowry's black.
Oh, no, for sure. Noticed. Yeah, I mean, that was definitely a lot of the undertone for the player's frustration was, this is a white owner and a black player, and there are some undertones there that suggest...
Yeah, because he is not an owner. He is not a team owner, and he is, in that sense, because there is this rule in place that NBA players should refrain from interacting with fans in any negative setting.
Right.
Where, remember, after Malice in the Palace, it was almost like the league threatened its players.
Yeah.
You're not allowed to run into the crowd, instead of the other way around. Like, hey,
don't throw beers at fans or at players.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So that dynamic is still there.
Yeah.
And when you have a black player who is in some ways, in terms of like the situational positioning of him being a player, and you have a fan / owner in the seats, whereas the rule intends for him, Kyle Lowry, not to be able to fight back.
Yeah.
Then it becomes a topic of, you know, suppressing a human being. Because I would totally understand it if Kyle Lowry's initial response had been to clock this guy.
Yeah, for sure.
I would totally have gotten into it. But you know what? Had he done that, how many outlets, how many alt-right outlets would have wrote about thugs?
Right. Oh, for sure. And he would have gotten banned for the rest of the finals. I mean, like, as much as Mark Stevens was in the wrong here, I think Kyle Lowry deserves just all of the credit for how he's handled this situation, how he restrained himself at the time, how in the post-game press conference he called this guy out, said he has no business being part of the NBA, called for a lifetime ban, addressed reporters' questions about it the next day. I think he spoke to reporters before the NBA announced the punishment, I want to say.
Right.
I just think he's handled this with, honestly, with the maturity, and he would be the first to admit it, the maturity that he wouldn't have had earlier in his career.
Yeah,
it's shown a lot of growth and development for Kyle Lowry, and I think you're, honestly, in some ways, you're seeing that on the court, too. Like, he's just, you know, he has matured to a point where he understands, all right, my team needs me. He said he came back to the huddle afterwards, and he was still really pissed, and Danny Green basically, like, took him aside and said, look, man, we need you. Lock back in. Like, we get it. That was a messed up situation, but we're still in the midst of a close finals game. We need you to focus. And then he immediately snapped back in, and look where we are.
And I think more than anything, that was the best middle finger you could give to Mark Stevens.
Yeah.
Because his attempt at shoving Kyle might have been, hey, let me see if I can get him out of the game.
Right.
And Kyle remaining calm.
Yeah.
And delivering.
Yep.
Kind of defeated Mark Stevens' entire purpose, if that was the purpose he went for.
Yeah, I really don't think he put any thought into it. I think it was just like a baseline caveman instinct. But
that's just so bad.
But honestly, I mean, I hope he didn't put any thought into it, or he should definitely be banned for life. But even if even if it's just that's your natural instinct, you don't belong near the NBA.
Yep.
You just
I agree.
You don't. So we'll see what happens with him. I mean, look, they're not going to be able to, like, force him to sell his shares overnight. So maybe this happens during the offseason. I'm sure the NBA does not want this to overshadow such a great series, obviously.
Agreed.
So, like, for all we know, in a couple months, he'll be gone and we never have to think about this guy again. But
yeah, but he'll get $180 million out of this, which I also hate very much.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, on the bright side, the Warriors are probably going to make a lot more money once they move into the Chase Center, and he's going to get none of that. So,
yep, that is very much true.
That's a win. Kyle Lowry will end up costing him millions and millions of dollars, as well he should. Because,
by the way, regarding the Chase Center, I haven't really looked, but I haven't seen like any videos yet of like the interior or anything. Has that been announced, or is that like still pending?
I'm not sure. I think they've shown at least, like, sketches of what it was supposed to look like.
Oh, okay. Well, then I need to just be better at Google. But I was just, because we've spent, or we have spent, we are not Jeff Van Gundy and Mark Jackson, but Mark Jackson and Jeff Van Gundy spent a lot of time talking about the new arena. So now I'm beginning very curious.
What this new arena will look like? Yeah, we'll find out in a couple of
months. If it means, like, a uniform switch as well, like, this would just make a perfect time to just kind of, Not just rebuild the entire brand, but maybe just kind of, I don't know, freshen it up a little bit. Unless, of course, you hired the same designer who did the Houston Rockets
new logo. Yeah, oof.
Because, you know, putting gray on a basketball is somehow good.
The Houston Rockets offseason is just still off to a great start.
I showed that logo to one of my friends who's a graphic designer.
Uh-huh.
He said he officially did not want to comment.
That is the only correct response to the new logo. All right, boy. The NBA has the uncanny ability to, even when the finals are going on, also have business go on off the court. And we had that Thursday when the Brooklyn Nets agreed to send Allen Crabbe, this year's number 17 pick, and a 2020 lottery protected first to the Atlanta Hawks for Taurean Prince and a 2021 second. Let's talk about it from Brooklyn's side first.
Yes.
Because their intentions are very clear now. If they rescind everyone, and that includes D'Angelo Russell, they have enough cap space to offer two max deals to guys in the 7 to 9 year range. So that means Kyrie Irving, who is suddenly being linked to the Nets a lot. Mm-hmm. Stephen A. Smith has said he's eyeing them. Ian Begley said he's eyeing them. Even Woj, when he broke the story about this crab trade, said there is strong mutual interest between the two of them. So right. They could add a Kyrie Irving and then a Jimmy Butler, a Tobias Harris, a Klay Thompson, and still have be able to do that right now, zero questions asked. They can't do Kyrie and Kevin Durant yet. They're about $3.3 million short of that, but that's a Joe Harris salary dump away. There are ways around it. You know, they can get there if that's the goal. So
TLDR, they have money.
Right. So what do you think the Nets have up their sleeves right now?
I think you just kind of alluded to it. Kyrie and KD, I think, is the primary.
Mm-hmm.
And I think if KD is unavailable because he might re-sign with the Warriors, then it's Kyrie and somebody else. Maybe Jimmy Butler, as you mentioned, or Tobias Harris. Or, well, I mean, theoretically, they could make a pitch for Kawhi, but I just doubt that situation is in play right now. But who knows? I mean, that depends on Uncle Dennis to some extent.
Right.
Point is, they can get two superstars onto their roster for next season.
Yeah.
And I wrote about this on Forbes as well, because the biggest loser in this trade, you know, most trades have, you know, they have a winner and a loser. And it's neither of those teams.
Mm-hmm.
It's the Knicks.
Yeah.
The Knicks is the biggest loser in this trade because they just kind of sold off everything.
Kristaps.
Because, well, Kristaps wanted out because it's such a healthy place to be, apparently, in New York.
But, they salary dumped Kristaps to make two maxes.
Yes. And they are just going all in on the superstar chase, and they're hoping that the reputation, you know, Madison Square Garden, the mecca of basketball, all these things where I'm still, to be honest with you, I'm still kind of surprised. Why are we still calling New York, at least the Madison Square Garden, the mecca of basketball? Like, why does it still have this reputation? I'm not really sure. I mean, yeah, it's a great arena, but the Knicks have been irrelevant for so long. I mean, let's cool it.
Yeah.
But now the Nets have money. So if players want the New York market experience, if they want the additional marketing opportunities, the Nets are right there.
Mm-hmm.
Now they can just go to Brooklyn instead and enjoy tremendous success while still having all the same venues available to them as they did the Knicks. So right now, it becomes a choice, and frankly a simple one. Do you want to go to an extremely poorly run organization?
Right.
Or do you want to go to an organization led by actual professionals?
And it's not only that. It's, do you want to go to a 17-win Knicks team that has a bunch of young guys who may or may not be good?
Right.
Like, I'm high on Mitchell Robinson. I think he's raw, but he's going to turn into a good player.
I am too.
We have no idea what's going to happen with Kevin Knox, Frank Ntilikina, Dennis Smith Jr. If they spend the number 3 pick on RJ Barrett, he's like a high volume, mediocre efficiency type player. He's basically the second coming of Carmelo for them, probably.
I mean, that's probably best case scenario.
Right. But like that style of player, I should say.
Right. So not someone who is easily integrated into the larger scheme of a team. Right.
Is that better than joining a team, a 42-win core that has Spencer Dinwiddie, Joe Harris, Torian Prince, Caris LeVert, Jared Allen?
No, it's not better.
Coached by Kenny Atkinson, run by Sean Marks, who's proved he's, you know, a very... for them to be at the point they are, at, you know, 5 years after, 6 years after this, the Kevin Garnett trade, is remarkable. Like, Marks took this team over 3 years ago, and they're suddenly in the conversation for signing Kyrie Irving.
Well, Brian, I'm just now reminded of something, though.
What's that?
The Nets don't hand out records from their own band.
That's true. That might be the selling point.
There we go.
Yeah.
That's why the Knicks are still in the media as a valid destination. No, okay, so I'm kind of kidding here. Because the Knicks, for some reason, they still have this rep. We can't ignore it. It's completely illogical, but they still have this rep. So there's still a chance for the Knicks to come out with something, obviously. So I'm not sitting here going, oh, the Knicks are ultimately going to fail, yada, yada, yada.
Right.
But it's just now that there is a more legitimate threat, because like from a geographical perspective, your threat is your next door neighbor.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
Their whole plan, or from what it seemed, their whole plan was Durant and Irving. And now, if you're to believe the recent rumor mill, it seems like Irving to the Nets is possibly a done deal.
Correct.
So maybe Durant is still set on going to the Knicks. We don't know. We don't know how this, you know, maybe this finals changes his decision-making process. And maybe he's like, oh, these guys actually need me. I feel validated for the first time in 3 years. I'm going
to
stay here.
Or maybe he never had those issues that we all thought he had to begin with.
That's true, too. And so, like, you know, maybe they've received assurances. Let's say best case scenario, when they make that Kristaps Porzingis trade.
Right.
Rich Kleiman has already talked to James Dolan. He's like, no matter what, Kevin Durant is signing with you guys this summer. Plan ahead. Carve out a second max deal. We'll work on recruiting someone to be his co-star. So even if Irving doesn't happen, they could still go after Kemba, Jimmy, Tobias, Klay Thompson, Kawhi. Are they going to get any of those players? Jimmy, Tobias, and Kemba are probably the most realistic targets. I don't think Kawhi or Klay are going there.
Well, not Kemba, necessarily, because if he came out... Right, yeah. And he came out just a couple of days ago and was very complimentary of Charlotte and his time there. And not in, like, he didn't speak in the past tense.
Right.
It was like, he wants to be there. He likes it there. I don't think a player would go out of his way to compliment that in that manner, because he would lose leverage in contract negotiations.
Well, unless he's doing it, buttering them up, being like, give me that supermax, MJ.
Right, but then he's still interested in returning, even though, yeah, it might be for the money, but even so, I don't think he's... Yeah, I mean, he's absolutely a player. He's absolutely one you can contact and you can go for, but I don't think he's so easily swayed as we might believe otherwise. Yeah. Plus, and this is going to sound extra harsh, he would go from a situation in Charlotte to an even worse one in New York, depending, of course, you know, yeah, that all matters about KD. But like, if he's the first guy signed, right, and KD stays in Golden State,
yeah,
like, then he would actually, he would go through the very, very strange experience of going from the Hornets to the Knicks.
Yeah.
Which is like a career step down.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah. No, I mean, I just think for the Knicks right now, this summer just got so much harder. But let's go back to the actual trade, because I love it for Brooklyn, and I love it even more so for Atlanta.
Yeah, well, hit Atlanta in a second, because I do want to... There are a couple other things with Brooklyn. One, if... Hypothetically, let's say they can't get a second max guy. They get one max guy. They keep D'Angelo Russell's cap hold on the books. They still have about $15.6 million in cap space at that point.
Mm-hmm.
So they could... Like, they have a lot of optionality this summer. I saw a lot of criticism of this trade from the Brooklyn side, because they were saying, like, look, you gave up two first-round picks to salary dump Allen Crabbe. That's a lot. And it is, but I also think people are underrating Torian Prince. Like, he's not just a throw-in. I get the criticism, because he had a disappointing year in Atlanta. It seemed like the Hawks kind of soured on him. He's 1 year away from restricted free agency. But he could be really good in Kenny Atkinson's system.
Mm-hmm.
And
play two positions.
Yeah, he can play. I mean, right, he's versatile. And going ahead to next summer, are they going to pay him is the big question. Well, they have matching rights, so it's not like they're not under pressure. I mean, one, Sean Marks' reputation might work in his advantage this time, because teams might not be willing to throw an offer sheet at him unless it's a gigantic overpay, just thinking Marks is going to match. And maybe we have a situation like what happened with Clint Capela this past summer, where he ends up signing a completely reasonable deal because teams are just like, no, we're not going to do it. We're not going to get baited into overpaying for this guy when we know Morey's going to match. This could happen with Prince, too. Like, I'm not convinced that Taurean Prince gets $15 million a year next summer.
I agree. I think the way they structured this internally when they were negotiating is the 2020 lottery protected first. I think that specifically was for Taurean Prince.
Yeah.
And then the salary dump with Crabbe was for 17th.
Yep. I totally agree. And they get a 2021 second, which I know people aren't going to think too highly of, but
that's something.
It's another chip in their pot. So it's hard to know exactly how good I feel about this deal from Brooklyn side until we see who they sign this summer, how they use that cap space. But I respect the aggressiveness, and as you said, it puts the Knicks, like, they are sweating bullets right now. I also think it's kind of bad news for any team with a possible max free agent. And of course, like, I'm thinking of Philly here.
Yeah.
Because now Jimmy and Tobias have both been linked as possible Nets targets. Now the Nets can say, hey, we can afford Kyrie and one of you. And that's pretty appealing, especially if the Sixers don't offer their full 5-year max. So all of a sudden, the Sixers are really, like, that decreases the Sixers' leverage. And if they were hoping to get those guys to take a discount, you know, they could say, look, well, screw you guys. We're just going to go to Brooklyn instead.
Well, I have a solution to that, at least for Tobias. So it's 6 p.m. June 30th that you open up, right?
Yep.
Well, you contact Boban. that's the first call you make. That's the Boban. Boban, we prioritize you.
Coming back.
And Boban is like, oh, you prioritize me. I'll sign immediately. And then you call Tobias and you go, we just got Boban back. And Tobias is going to be, oh, okay.
Yeah.
See you on Monday, right?
Yeah. I mean, No, Boban already said there's like a 90% chance he's coming back.
Well, then there's a 90% chance that Tobias is coming back.
Yeah, I agree.
They're not breaking that up.
No, I know. But it's just they're going to have to max both of those guys. And then the Nets put more pressure on them to do so.
I still think you're sitting somewhat pretty. I know I kid a lot, but I mean, you went deep into the playoffs. It's the second round, but I mean, in terms of the Eastern Conference specifically, you made a run.
They took the team that very well might win the NBA championship to a game 7 and lost on a buzzer beater.
So, as you can see. And, I mean, Jimmy seems to be getting more and more comfortable with the offense and with his teammates. And I think he's looking for some stability now. I don't think he wants to be known as a guy who's going to be on his fourth team in 4 years.
Yep.
So I think he's pretty safe in that way. And Tobias as well, to some extent, because I know he struggled a lot. And he had a tougher time acclimating himself to the Philly team, at least afterwards. And he came in hot, and then he kind of just... I don't know what really happened, but his production leveled off a little bit.
Yeah.
But I think he's hungry to wanting to go back and really, you know, correct that.
Yeah,
I think they see the potential there. I mean, you have a winning system. You have one of the best centers in the damn league. The Knicks have Kevin Knox.
Yeah. I'm not too worried. I still think.
Yeah.
I'll have some articles soon about what I think the Sixers are going to do this summer. But I think.
So can we please talk about Atlanta now?
Yes.
Please?
Yeah.
Because I have a name. I have a name I'm going to throw it right at you right now.
Okay.
Jared Culver.
Yep.
So the Hawks have the 8th, the 10th, and the 17th pick here in the first round of this draft. They could easily trade up to like 5, Cleveland.
Yep.
And go for Culver. And people could, you know, sit there and go, but why would Culver slip to 5? Because it appears that the Lakers have given Darius Garland a promise at 4.
Right.
Which would make sense because he's a clutch sports
player. Yep.
Yep. And, so the real concern here is actually number 3, the Knicks. The Knicks seem hell-bent on RJ Barrett. That could be a smokescreen.
Mm-hmm.
And they could be into Jared Culver. But here's the great thing if you're Atlanta. Because you have these three picks, you don't have to like settle for number five with Cleveland. If you want to be absolutely effing sure that you get Jared Culver, you trade up to three.
Or, I mean, I think it's one of those deals that you just don't make it until you're on, until Cleveland's on the clock. Like, you agree to it beforehand, and you call right. Cleveland, and you say, if Culver's on the board at five, we will give you 8, 17, 41, whatever. Whatever it takes.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
If he's not, no deal, and you guys take Garland yeah. or whoever you want.
It's fine. Yeah, like a prearranged agreement.
Yeah, right, exactly. And like, yep. if Cleveland says yes, then good. And if not, then you move on elsewhere. But yeah, I agree. Right. I mean, it seems like, you know, they have 3 first round picks now, 3 second round picks. They're not bringing 6 rookies into training camp. They could trade some of those for future draft considerations. They could spend some on draft and stashes. They have a bunch of options. And I wrote about the Hawks. Well, just this trade and then just the Hawks in general. I wrote about them at the Basketball Writers on Friday because I think their optionality really makes them like a low-key power player this summer. Because,
yeah.
I mean, with the draft, we'll see what happens. I would expect them to be active in trade talks, continue to be active in trade talks. The Crab deal isn't official until July 6th, just because the Crab for Torian Prince salaries don't match at all. And so the Hawks will need cap space to make this deal work. But once the deal goes through, including the cap holds for 8, 10, and 17, they still have about $26 million in cap space. So if they want to bring Dwayne Dedmon back, as Shams Charania of The Athletic recently reported, they can do that. If they want to do another salary dump to pick up more assets, they can do that.
Yep.
I don't think they're going to, you know, they were talking.
Or they can do both.
Right, exactly. Like, they were, I think it was Sam Amick of The Athletic in March, I want to say, had the report where they were saying, like, the Hawks are just so high on how Trae Young and John Collins have developed that they're going to try to get a seat at the table with the big free agents this summer.
Yeah.
I don't think that's going to happen. For one, they just don't have. They're, again, $26 million is not 32.7, so they would have to free up a lot of space, and they would have to dump Bazemore, Crab, or Plumlee, which is possible, but I just think they're not at that stage of their rebuild where they're dumping assets to get a star yet. Like,
right, but the idea was just to get a meeting just to, like, I don't know, solidify themselves
right.
as a team down the line.
Yeah.
But I kind of get the idea behind it, though. I don't think they come in with any aspirations of signing anyone. I think yeah. they're just... Like, but I get your point about them not having cap space being, like, a non-starter is well-received.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I guess you could say, like, it's more for their agent than the player itself. Like, the agent yeah. can go back to his other clients and say, oh, okay, this is the long-term vision they have. Next summer, they're really interesting. Because next summer... they could have upwards of $80 million in cap space. Bazemore, Crab, and Plumlee all come off the books after this year.
Yeah. This is what I've been talking about for a while.
Yeah.
I think that's the year they do it. I don't think they should go in on guys this year. I think they did the exact right thing by yep. trading for Crab or just, you know, getting assets in a salary dump trade.
Yep.
I love what they're doing. Their cap sheet is clean. They have so many wonderful opportunities. For some reason, whenever I think about them, you've seen Moneyball with Brad Pitt, and there's that scene where they lose Giambi, I want to say,
yeah.
Mm-hmm. or yeah, and Jonah Hill's character, says, I think this opens up so many interesting possibilities for you guys.
Right.
That scene just comes back to me whenever I think of the Hawks.
Yeah.
I think this is a team that they have so much, you know, financial flexibility. They have so much talent on their rookie deals. And these guys have just tremendous ceiling. It's like Trae Young, screw it. Trae Young could be the best point guard in the damn league in 5 or 6 years.
Yeah. I mean his passing vision is sublime.
And his shooting is only going to become better because he's not a 32% shooter as he was this year from downtown. Like, this was his rookie season. He was still getting acclimated to the league, and he started off a little bit slow. Like, he might be the best point guard in the league in half a decade.
Mm-hmm.
John Collins might be, you know, Amari Stoudemire 2.0 with a 3-point shot.
Right.
There's so many things that's going on there that the components are just so interesting. And if they get Jared Culver, like, Jared Culver is my guy for this draft. I love him. He is one of those people who will have like a similar defensive impact potentially as Kawhi Leonard. He will be able to guard multiple positions, at least one through four. He has such quick feet and quick hands. He's smart. He reads plays and screens. And he's got the potential to be a first-team all-defense for the next 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
Offensively, a little bit hit or miss. But if he's paired with Trae Young and John Collins, both of whom could, in their primes, each average like 25 points a game, the need for offensive production out of Culver wouldn't be as big.
Right.
I would love that flow of that team, having, you know, those two tremendous scorers and then have an all-around defensive ace in Culver, who can still play make, by the way. Like, he resembles Jimmy Butler in that sense. Like, he doesn't have a great 3-point shot, but he can handle the basketball. He can make plays, so he's not inept offensively. He's not Andre Iguodala. Think about the current Andre Iguodala, but with more offense.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that type of player is exactly what Atlanta needs.
Yeah.
I would be all in on that youth movement there. Yeah. All in on it.
Yeah, I mean, I know you wrote a piece for Forbes recently about how they could just have a core set in place, and this was before the Crab trade.
Correct.
And you were mentioning like Jackson Hayes as a target at 10 as well. Like,
yeah, because at that point they had 8 and 10.
Right.
And I was just kind of like, stay with those two, it's fine. But now that they got 17th as well, now it makes sense to trade up. So when I wrote that article, I just kind of insinuated, don't trade up, because now you can get two assets instead of one. But now you can definitely package two picks because you can keep one of them.
Right.
And then you would still have two picks.
Right.
You just might get a better player. So yeah, my point was, if you get Jackson Hayes and like Sekou Doumbouya, like, you'd be golden, because, I mean, first of all, Jackson Hayes, he shot 74% from the free throw line, so he's got some very good shooting mechanics, would absolutely be able to stretch it out a little bit. Don't know if he's going to be a 3-point shooter, but his release is okay. Would definitely be able to hit like the 15-17 foot jump shot. He blocks shots like at an amazing rate. He was at 2.2 a game in 23 minutes or so. Rebounds, you know, a rim roller, understands screens, can even make like decent passes, though he barely averaged assists in college, but that was more of a setup than anything else. And then Sekou Doumbouya is one of my absolute favorites as well, like a hidden gem from France. He's not going to turn 19 until December 25th, so he's going to play almost half an NBA season, Brian, at the age of 18.
Mm-hmm.
Just 6'9", small forward slash power forward, just a forward, really, a combo forward. Has a really nice-looking stroke. And the percentages aren't quite there yet, but they'll come. Can play in transition. Versatile defensively. Can pick up, you know, smaller players, larger players. Like, he can switch onto a shooting guard just as well as he can, like, a center. So he's extremely intriguing as well. So if you put a long-term project like, or two long-term projects like Doumbouya and Hayes in there, like, that would fit the same age timeline as Trae Young and John Collins, and then 4 to 5 years down the road, that team might be absolutely insane.
But now you can just replace Doumbouya with Culver. Like, now, boom. Now there's a chance you could have, next year, you could have as a long-term starting five, Trae Young, Kevin Huerter, Culver, John Collins, Jackson Hayes.
Oh my God. Yeah. I mean, yes, absolutely.
The Hawks are gonna I'm ready to jump on board.
Here's the thing with the Hawks, right? They would have to do something wicked stupid to mess this up.
Yeah, I mean, at a certain point, I think I wrote this, they're at the point right now where, like, they're in the mystery box stage of the rebuild, which is the most fun part, because it's like, look at all the possibilities we have, and then... Mm-hmm. at some point that cap space turns into players, and you start to get boxed in a little bit more and a little bit more and a little bit more and a little bit more.
Right.
And then you turn into the Sixers and have to overpay Tobias Harris to keep him together. You know, they're right now they're in the young fun part. They're going to be there for another couple of years because Collins and Young, you know, they still have a couple of years left on their rookie deals. But at a certain point, they will, you know, they do have to make their move with cap space, but like they're not in any immediate pressure to do so. So I think this summer, I would be surprised if they took on much long-term salary beyond this year, just because I think they want to maintain that flexibility moving forward.
Agreed.
But they could still take on, you know, they have so much room to take on a Bismack Biyombo or an Evan Turner.
Just about to say Bismack.
Yeah, I mean, like, I don't know that they're going to take on, like, a Nick Batum or anything like that without getting up a major asset in return.
Yeah. But yeah, and, like, the Hornets doesn't even have that asset. Like, they have number 12, but that's not even enough.
Yeah.
Like, no, I think you're absolutely right. It's going to be one of those bad deals that were signed in 2016.
Yeah. And they're quickly dwindling because a lot of those guys have been stretched.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, they have a number of ways they can go. And I think Hawks fans should be rightly optimistic about their team's future. Travis Schlenk has done a phenomenal job since he's taken over this team.
Yes, and he has not been caught saying, you know, he's got a little African in him. Right. So that's also very great.
Also an upgrade right there.
Yeah.
Well, that's probably a good place to wrap up, Moit. So everyone, we will be back after Game 5. Maybe we'll have a Bye Felicia to do. Who knows? We'll find out Monday. Until then, please follow us on Twitter at the NBA Pod. You can find our Twitter handles in our bio. So give us a follow as well. You can also find us on iTunes, so please subscribe, download, leave some 5-star reviews. We'd love any feedback. We're now being hosted on Spreaker, so please check them out on Spreaker. I screwed that up. I'm going to do that one more time. And we're now being hosted on Spreaker, so you can check them out on Twitter, at Spreaker. Until next time, I'm Brian Toporek, and I was joined, as always, by Morten Jensen. Have a good one, Mort.
You too, Brian. I'm almost hoping that we have a Bye Felicia on the Warriors because we've never had that before.
Oh, man. Slander is going to fly.
Take care, man.
You too.